Stay warm and save every day. All in the Kroger app. Get select Post cereal or Kroger peanut butter for $1.49 each with a digital coupon. And we've lowered prices. Save 15% or more on hundreds of items like Thomas Mini Bagels, Campbell's SpaghettiOs, and more. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to Ringside Chaos, the professional wrestling discussion segment of the Bear of Texas podcast. The only professional wrestling podcast in the world where pro wrestling is discussed passionately, with confidence, with great knowledge, and most of all, in the most sophisticated way. So brace yourselves, ladies and gentlemen, because chaos is about to be unleashed.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another edition of Ringside Chaos, the professional wrestling discussion segment of the Bear of Texas podcast and Pain Train Pipe Bomb Productions. My name is Alex Alcazaz, a.k.a. the Bear of Texas, and ladies and gentlemen, I am here to recap All Elite Wrestling Full Gear because, ladies and gentlemen, I am proud to say that I had the major blessing from the Lord Almighty himself, God, to have the opportunity to watch the show. And ladies and gentlemen, I should make it interesting that I watched the show at the movies, okay? Now, going to the movies is something I actually do rarely nowadays. It kind of seems that when the pandemic started, it felt like going to the movies was something that, you know, was kind of long dead, like, when I went to the movies to see the James Bond film in last year, it felt like it had been an entire decade since I've set foot in the movies, so the experience kind of got back to me. And this was not the first time I went to the movies to watch an AEW pay-per-view. The last time I had done that was the same night that Bryan Danielson and Adam Cole had both debuted for All Elite Wrestling, so now, the ticket I felt was a little bit overpriced, but the truth of the matter is, I kind of felt like, you know what, I want to go watch the show. Now, ladies and gentlemen, for those of you that don't listen to my other show, my Dallas Cowboys podcast called Cowboys Talk, I recently revealed that I have been actually job hunting for a part-time job. And while I assured everybody on social media that even if I work part-time, it is not going to disrupt anything with these shows whatsoever, including Ringside Chaos, I am a man of my word. I promise to you, even if I work part-time, I assure you that the show will not be disrupted. Ringside Chaos, along with all my other shows, will continue to operate as normal. I will still be here to talk about professional wrestling. Ladies and gentlemen, I promise you, there is absolutely nothing to worry about. Anyway, that being said, although I should remind you in this episode, right now I am still extremely, extremely ill. I have been dealing with a huge case of allergies for the past 3 days. Thankfully, when I tested, it ended up being negative. I just have allergies, so thank God. But honestly, earlier as I was recapping a Cowboys game from my other show, I coughed a little bit of excessively. So if I cough a lot or sneeze too many times, guys, I deeply apologize, but I always say to myself, illness or not, I need to come here. The show needs to go on because there is a lot of important talking points and some very important content that needs to be put out. Now, I regret to inform you, I was supposed to do this episode with my good buddy, Mr. David LaFon, but unfortunately, he's ill as well. I spoke to several of the people, but nobody was able to come on the show. So I said to myself, well, you know what? I'm going to have to be the lone wolf today. I'm going to go ahead and fly solo, but you know what? That's okay, so here I am. AEW Full Gear. Well, for those of you that watched it, the show certainly goes for itself. The results all speak for themselves, and our thoughts as far as how the show went, the ratings, how the matches went, how the outcomes, everything. All of us unique and well-educated pro wrestling fans, we all have our own little say, okay? In my case, I did, in fact, thoroughly enjoy the show. It was the wrestling card itself was exciting. The pre-show, believe it or not, I was actually pretty excited about that. And honestly, in my case, it's not quite often that I'm actually excited about a pre-show in a professional wrestling pay-per-view, but in this case, I was. But honestly, the card itself, you know, it speaks to itself, but I think, you know, the biggest story is heavily debated, you know. Some of us say the biggest story is Saraya, who recently announced that she's finally medically cleared to compete, and she wrestled her first match in over 5 years against Dr. Britt Baker, DMD. So Saraya, you know, announcing that she was medically cleared and wrestling her first match in this pay-per-view was the big story. Others say, of course, Maxwell Jacob Friedman challenging Jon Moxley for the AEW World Championship. As we know, this was MJF's casino ladder poker chip cash-in match, and we all know the outcome out of that, and we'll get to that in a little bit. So, you know, of course, you know, the story between Jungle Boy Jack Perry and Luchasaurus. You know, like I said, the whole pay-per-view speaks for itself. I mean, the Elite making their return was definitely exciting. You know, they unsuccessfully challenged Death Triangle for the AEW World Trios Championship. And speaking of that, there's been a heavy, huge announcement with that rivalry goes moving forward, and we'll get to that. And, you know, and speaking of that, you know, during the match, apparently there were chants in the crowd during the match between the Elite and the Death Triangle. So, you know, of course, you know, if for those of you that know, you know, the chants were FCM Punk, FCM Punk, and then there was some chants, you know, for Colt Cabana. There's a story right here saying, you know, Colt Cabana actually gave a response. You know, I actually I hadn't looked at it until just now, and honestly, Colt Cabana responded on Twitter saying, and I quote, "I was chanting for the Elite," unquote. So, you know, of course, you know, the Elite, you know, came back since they were suspended back in September. We still haven't seen CM Punk, although we've heard a lot of rumors that, you know, he could be on his way out or that he is officially done. You know, and everybody, a lot of people have wondered why I have not talked about this on the show. I'm like, look, these rumors regarding CM Punk, I'm not going to play around with that. I'm not even going to say anything until we have confirmation, okay? Some rumors say that CM Punk is on his way out. Some already insist that he's already done. You know, this is a cat and mouse game. We just run into one dead end, right into another. Like, we're not getting anywhere. This whole thing with CM Punk has not really gotten anywhere. And until there's anything official, then, you know, I'm not going to bother. That's all I can honestly say about it, okay? So, the whole thing with CM Punk, again, it's huge within itself. But until there's anything official, there's really, I can't say it's not much to go on, because quite frankly, the truth of the matter is, it's absolutely nothing to go on. So that's that. So the pre-show, you know, there was the 10-man tag match between Danhausen and the Best Friends against the Factory. You know, as we know, is led by QT Marshall. The ending of the match certainly was surprising, but I did thoroughly enjoy that match. Ricky Starks versus Brian Cage, and the winner advances to the semifinals for the AEW World Championship Eliminator Tournament. Ricky Starks defeated Brian Cage, and he's set to face Ethan Page, which I believe will be this week. I think it might be on Rampage or on Dynamite, I'm not entirely sure. But the main event of the pre-show, Eddie Kingston versus Jun Akiyama. You know, when Eddie Kingston, you know, gave that pre-match interview, man, you know, Eddie Kingston to me is a huge influence, because Eddie Kingston and I, we have so much in common. I mean, Eddie Kingston, you know, has his struggles with mental health just like I do. He has worked so hard, busted his ass for so long, for 18 years on the independent circuit until he was finally signed by All Elite Wrestling. Here I am, I've been busting my butt so much for the past seven, eight years or so. I am 29 years old, I'm about to turn 30. Still been working on my big break in journalism, you know, running 5 shows. Writing for a certain website, and I've bounced back and forth between many websites for so long, and mentally it has killed me. It has gotten to me, affected me so much emotionally, you know, and I've been trying to get through it, you know, with all my friends out there to support me, you know, and Eddie Kingston, you know, his struggles as well. I mean, Eddie Kingston and I have so much in common, and ladies and gentlemen, I gotta tell you, like, every day I've somehow been praying that I can one day, honestly, I want to be in contact with Eddie Kingston. I want to get to know the guy. I would love to have him on this show. He's welcome to even either of my other shows. I mean, He's from New York. He's a Giants fan. So if Eddie Kingston ever wants to come on my Dallas Cowboys show and trash talk the Dallas Cowboys, I'll be honest, he's more than welcome to. But Eddie Kingston is very underrated, great worker, absolutely legend and gold on that mic. You know, Eddie Kingston, when I'm getting to learn about him, watch a lot of the stuff he did on the indies and throughout of his career, I literally spent hours on YouTube watching all of his promos and all the things he's done. I mean, I did my homework on Eddie Kingston, and that's the way I can appreciate everything he's done. It's not just so much that we both have our issues with mental health, but seeing how he worked so hard for so long to finally make it in the big leagues with All Elite Wrestling, Eddie Kingston is basically the perfect example. If you keep at it, you never give up, one day, one way or the other, your dreams will come true. So in that story, you know, with Jun Akiyama and seeing how that match went, you know, 10 and a half minutes, you know, Jun Akiyama, you know, that style, the Japanese style, and Eddie Kingston, you know, basically said that Jun Akiyama is his inspiration. And, you know, of course, Jun Akiyama is, you know, wrestles for DDT Pro Wrestling, you know, which is a Japanese wrestling promotion. You know, Akiyama, you know, quite a history. You know, he's worked for so long for All Japan Pro Wrestling. He was actually the president, representative director, and co-head booker for All Japan Pro Wrestling, as well as a wrestler. So, wow. He really is indeed a Japanese legend. Huh. A three-time winner of the Wrestling Observer Newsletter Tag Team of the Year Award. You know, a very serious in-ring style. I mean, wow. I mean, this dude really is an inspiration to a lot of wrestlers. So, you know, in Eddie Kingston's case, I'm very happy to see that he was able to work with somebody that he idolizes and deeply respects, somebody that inspired him to pursue a career in professional wrestling. You know, as we know, Eddie Kingston has told the story, professional wrestling has saved the guy's life. He was able to work with somebody that, you know, again, that he looked up to, and that particular individual put Eddie Kingston over. I mean, the match was great, and the way Eddie Kingston won was absolutely amazing. You saw the match. I mean, you saw the physicality. You saw the true nature and art of that match. And Eddie Kingston coming out on top and seeing the respect between the two after the match, you know, shaking hands, greeting each other with a great amount of respect, that massive golden promo that Eddie Kingston cut, and the way he ended that promo, oh, I'm telling you, man. I'm telling y'all, y'all need to go check it out. I mean, I could tell you everything about that promo, but I strongly encourage y'all that y'all need to go check it out. And I know I've spent a little bit of too much time talking about Eddie Kingston and praising him for us being, you know, being very alike and having so much in common. But that match between Eddie Kingston and Jun Akiyama, man, that was incredible. So the pre-show itself was unique. And, you know, the fact that the pay-per-view, the event started off with in the steel cage match between Jungle Boy Jack Perry and Luchasaurus. You know, starting off with a steel cage match, hey, why not? I mean, the card was stacked. Every match had great potential moving forward, okay? Now, the whole rivalry between Jungle Boy Jack Perry and Luchasaurus, you know, of course, you know, the Jurassic Express. Oh, boy. You know, Jungle Boy Jack Perry, this dude, much like Eddie Kingston, severely, criminally underrated is Jack Perry. And the match between Luchasaurus, you know, and the whole rivalry, you know, involving Christian Cage, you know, I feel like it had to come down boiling to this. You know, it had to be settled once and for all in a steel cage. And man, did we see a battle. You know, the fact that I like how the only way to win is by pinfall or submission. You know, and the way Christian Cage got involved in the match, this was actually hilarious. And if you saw this, you know exactly what I'm talking about. When he stole the key from one of the referees outside who locked the cage, the referee doesn't even notice until he sees Christian Cage at the door opening it, okay? And then the battle embroils outside, okay? Then Christian Cage, all these referees show up and, you know, drag Christian Cage backstage as he's been ejected. And then Luchasaurus starts bringing in weapons like a table and some chairs and everything into the cage. So I like that. You know, the whole steel cage match becomes no holds barred or extreme rules, straight fight, whatever you want to call it. Damn allergies. I apologize. You know, the match really intensified, you know, and, you know, Jungle Boy Jack Perry, you know, even getting color in the match. And for those of you that don't know, getting color is a reference to what a wrestler bleeds during the match. So the match within itself was absolutely amazing. And the finish, you know, that flying elbow on Jack Perry on Luchasaurus was laying on a table. That I thought was pretty cool. And then the match ending in a submission. You know, even some of the wrestling fans, I know we kind of got into a debate. Like, they felt the match would have ended by a pinfall. Or some said, no, it's good that it ended in a submission. You know, some of these guys, honestly, believe it or not, thought that the match could have, you know, at least ended in a no contest. But, you know, at the end of the day, for me, I'm glad Jack Perry, you know, went over in the match. You know, I mean, after the match, the reaction that he got and everything, I mean, yeah, the fans were totally fully invested in the guy. And, you know, moving forward, I don't know what this means for Luchasaurus. I don't know what this means for Jack Perry. You know, honestly, who knows, I mean, if the rivalry truly is over. I mean, how many times have we been in a situation to where we think the rivalry has been settled once and for all with a particular match, but then little do we know, like a week or so later, or even less than that, we probably realize or we learn that we've seen nothing yet. Like, those guys were only just getting started. So who knows? But as far as Jungle Boy Jack Perry goes, you know, he's been with the company since the beginning, you know, 3 years. And, you know, now that he's finally, you know, the fact that he won the match, and this was the same arena where he and Luchasaurus became the AEW World Tag Team Champions. So it's good that, you know, goes from that and he wins the match. So, you know, it all makes sense, you know, at this point. So, excuse me, but, you know, for this point, you know, it kind of makes us really miss the days of the Jurassic Express. But moving on, Death Triangle versus the Elite. Oh, the Elite made that entrance. Oh boy, now that was cool, wasn't it? But, you know, I told myself this. So the Elite, I mean, the Young Bucks and the, you know, Kenny Omega really acting like baby faces. So, you know, I said to myself this, like, you know, with that triangle, you know, being heels, I suppose, you know, at least, well, we all know that Pac, the bastard Pac, and yeah, he's you know, been heel for you know, a while now. I think ever since he came back to AEW, he's actually been a heel. You know, Penta, El Zero Miedo, and Rey Fénix, the Lucha Brothers. You know, there was a point of the match, you know, how Pac, you know, always has that weapon that he carries, and he told, you know, Rey Fénix to use it, and Fénix, you know, refused. But at the end of the match kind of told a different story. I'll tell you, this match was just, what a brilliant thriller. I mean, the Elite versus Death Triangle, I mean, these kinds of six-man tag team match for the AEW World Trios Championship. I mean, the way the match went, I mean, this is something I would expect when you see the likes of, you know, three brilliant stables like the Elite and Death Triangle working brilliant matches. And as we know, you know, the Lucha Brothers, Penta El Cielo Miedo and Rey Fénix and the Young Bucks, who'll never forget that pay-per-view. And that's the pay-per-view where I was previously when I also saw it. That steel cage match where the Lucha Brothers defeated the Young Bucks in that steel cage. So this time I kind of find it amazing, you know, you see them battling out again in such a prolific, high caliber match. But, you know, as you know, at the end when Kenny Omega had Rey Fénix in position for the One-Winged Angel, and Rey Fénix actually uses that weapon and then rolls over Kenny Omega for the pin. Oh boy. You know, the way the match ended, you know, just had me so mesmerized, and this is the element of surprise. I mean, this is how professional wrestling really gets to us wrestling fans. Like, when a finish goes in a certain way, that there was a time in the match where we thought that this would not happen, because again, Rey Fénix refusing to use the weapon and, you know, wanting to get it done, you know, correctly, but then he uses it at the end to get the win. Oh boy. But the reaction for Rey Fénix at the end, you know, it still kind of told something. So I don't know what's going on, you know, moving forward with that triangle, but the match itself, man, you know, all the close calls, all the near falls, man, I'm telling you, these kinds of matches, these six-man tag team matches, when I call them thrillers, even thrillers are major understatements, ladies and gentlemen. But the Elite came up short, but at the end of the day, I'm glad to see the Elite back. And, you know, we still know a word on CM Punk, but all these fans I was with, you know, talking how, you know, if it's still a work or if it's, you know, whatever, but it was announced that a best of seven series between Death Triangle and the Elite is starting, okay? Man. See, that right there, you know, and immediately, too, it was announced. And, you know, AEW's next pay-per-view is actually going to be Revolution, which takes place in March of next year at the Chase Center in San Francisco. So so now I'm kind of asking myself, I wonder if the best of seven actually ends there. So I would have said it would definitely make sense. And I'm actually trying to find out right now, you know, like that, you know, but you know, the best of seven series, some fans I was with, they weren't really fond of it. Okay, I have it right here. Yeah, okay. Nope. So match one, which was, you know, this was match one. Okay, so Death Triangle already has a 1-0 lead. Match 2 is actually going to be on the 23rd this week in Chicago, Illinois. Okay. One of the matches, match 4, is going to be December next. It's going to be next month. It's going to be in Garland, but unfortunately I won't be there. Match 5, I like to say if necessary, because again, this is a best of 7 series, so. Yeah, the World Series, the NBA Finals, but. The final, if necessary, match 7 could be January 11th in Los Angeles, California on AEW Dynamite. So, yeah, so this could go from, this could go all the way up to January. So, anyway, yeah. Okay, but, you know, as far as, you know, the concept for the best of 7 series, I'm all for it. You know, but now, I think now that I kind of look at it, you know, if it ended at the AEW Revolution, which again, is not until March, maybe it would take too long, but, you know, but we'll see. But moving forward with the whole Death Triangle and the Elite, you know, the Elite are they're down 1-0, and this was match one of the best of 7 series. So, oh boy, this is definitely getting exciting. And honestly, I'm gonna make a prediction right now. This is coming down to seven. This is coming down to a match 7. Believe me. So the next match was Jade Cargill versus Nyla Rose. I really honestly have nothing much to say about this. You know, this all started when Nyla Rose attacked Jade, stole the title, and, you know, was claiming herself to be the TBS champion. And I said to myself this, you know, I said to myself, huh. So in this, Jade Cargill turns into a babyface, but I don't think anything's been official about this yet. So the status of Jade Cargill, as far as I'm concerned, I think she's still a heel. But, you know, in my case, I'm just glad to see Nyla Rose, you know, be in a storyline. It's probably not the best storyline, but again, Nyla Rose, she's been with AEW since the beginning. So I'm just glad to see Nyla Rose, and I hope that AEW management and booking, you know, continues to use Nyla Rose, you know, accordingly, because Nyla Rose is an absolutely amazing talent. I mean, Nyla Rose, like I said, been there since the beginning. Nyla Rose, a former AEW Women's Champion, okay? Nyla Rose deserves respect, and AEW fans admire her and they appreciate her, so I strongly recommend AEW management to keep using Nyla Rose in storylines, and hopefully in good ones, too. But, as far as this match, I mean, nothing much to say. I'm not surprised Jade Cargill won. I mean, she's undefeated. I think now 42-0. It probably wouldn't have made sense if she had lost, but that's all I really have to say. But as far as Jade Cargill being a face now, I still don't think so, but that's really all I have to say about it. But now the next one, the four-way match. You know, I like this one, man. The four-way match, the four corners match for the Ring of Honor World Championship. Chris Jericho versus Sammy Guevara versus Claudio Castagnoli versus Bryan Danielson. Now, the whole story with Chris Jericho being the Ring of Honor World Champion, the Ocho, and which I love, he goes from Le Champion, now he's the Ocho, that I think is absolutely amazing, and how Chris Jericho says he's going to desecrate and destroy the true, unique legacy of the original Ring of Honor, you know, like that. So Chris Jericho being, you know, the high-profile main event villain that he's always been very good at being. You know, of course, you know, the Jericho Appreciation Society, Sammy Guevara is a part of it. You know, of course, Sammy Guevara said that, you know, he was going to do everything it took to make sure that the title stayed within the society. So I like how you see the, you know, two of the originals from Ring of Honor, Bryan Danielson, the American Dragon, and Claudio Castagnoli, you know, being part of the story. So, you know, and, you know, seeing how Sammy Guevara at one point was so close to winning the title. You kind of tell yourself this. I mean, Sammy Guevara, you know, one way or the other, Sammy Guevara is definitely going to be in the world title picture, whether it's the Ring of Honor title or the AEW world title. But, you know, honestly, I knew that Chris Jericho was going to win in the finish of the match. I'll be honest, I kind of liked it. But I'm telling you, the match within itself, I mean, I'm telling you, the four-way match was so amazing. You know, I felt like, you know, this is right there. This is the main event, if you ask me. The four-way match truly, to me, struck me as the true main event of the show, okay? And I don't mean any disrespect to anybody else. I'm telling you, the four-way match, you know, we talk about a thriller from the one with the six-man tag match for the AEW World Trios Championship. I mean, the four-way match for the Ring of Honor World Championship, that was something very, very unique. Okay, I mean, the Ocho, Chris Jericho, you know, climbing out on top, you know, emerging victorious again. I saw it coming. You know, Ring of Honor actually has a final battle. You know, the final battle, which is the traditional Ring of Honor main event. It's actually, I was actually doing a little bit of research that, you know, Ring of Honor is actually, it's considered Ring of Honor's premier flagship event, the final battle at pay-per-view. I think it's drawn a lot of similarities, and it's drawn some huge comparisons to WWE's WrestleMania. You know, a lot of Ring of Honor fans could probably honestly say that final battle is the WrestleMania of Ring of Honor. But in final battle is actually set to take place excuse me, next month at the College Park Center in Arlington, Texas, which is at the University of Texas at Arlington. Now, I won't be there, but it's okay. I mean, it's unfortunate, but, you know, a lot of things happening right now, so I don't have the time to make it. But, you know, it's interesting that the event is going to be held on the same day as WWE's NXT Deadline and UFC 282. So I'd imagine Chris Jericho being the Ring of Honor World Champion, he's definitely going to work that event. I mean, it would not make sense to have a Ring of Honor World Title match at the final battle. Again, the fact that Ring of Honor's final battle is considered to be the Ring of Honor WrestleMania, it would make no sense whatsoever for the Ring of Honor World Title to not be put on the line during that show. So having said that, it's no surprise that Chris Jericho didn't drop the belt. But then again, either way, there was no way he was going to drop the belt at Full Gear. So, moving forward right now, I do expect Jericho, I mean, obviously, it's pretty much at this point, we all know it's very likely to happen. Jericho is going to work, you know, at the final battle, because again, it would not make sense for the Ring of Honor World title not to be featured in the event. But, I think moving forward, I'm not sure, you know, what goes on, you know, if Claudio and the Dragon are still going to be in the Ring of Honor World Title picture. Somehow, part of me believes that it's still not over between those two, you know, and Chris Jericho for the Ring of Honor World Title. So, but the match within itself was, you know, amazing. You know, seeing the footage, you know, when Bryan Danielson, you know, won the championship, you know, back in the day of Ring of Honor in the early to mid 2000s. You know, seeing a very, very young Bryan Danielson and seeing where he is now in his career. And, you know, of course, we're reminded of that eye retina injury he suffered at Ring of Honor. Man, I mean, Daniel Bryan has had beyond his fair share of injuries, you know, in professional wrestling, you know, from the neck injury, the concussions, everything. I mean Bryan Danielson has done basically everything there is to do in professional wrestling. I mean, Bryan Danielson is a legend in Ring of Honor. A legend in WWE. I mean, the dude's a legend in Japan. Bryan Danielson is a god in the world of professional wrestling, if you ask me. But you know what I would love to see? Could you imagine if we could have Chris Jericho versus Danielson versus Castagnoli in a triple threat match at the final battle? You know, that would be cool, and I would wonder if by then Chris Jericho drops the belt. I mean, I think it would make sense. Like, it would make sense. Imagine he drops the belt to one of the Ring of Honor originals at the final battle. Again, considering that final battle is the WrestleMania for Ring of Honor, it would make sense then. But you know, what do I know? And you know, anything could happen. But I think at this point, it's clear that it's very likely. It's common sense and it's a no-brainer that the Ring of Honor world title. a match is to be featured on that line, because again, it would not make sense from a fan perspective and most importantly from a business perspective. So, but four-way match, amazing, loved it, so many moments, but the match, you know, you take them all in as a whole, you explain how the match went, and for everybody that watched, you know that it was a true, unique, dynamic, main event caliber match. Speaking of main event caliber, Saraya versus Dr. Britt Baker, DMD. I will not ever forget at the beginning when Saraya taking that hit and just literally pulling a little ruse on all the fans. You know, her brother Zach Zodiac was actually in the front row, so it was good to see him, you know, out there, you know, supporting his sister. But well, the match I think was great. You know, it was definitely a great battle, a great story. The finish of the match, that's where I'm kind of like, I don't think the match ended correctly, because Saraya won by pinfall, and I really believe that the best way to do it was for Saraya to win. Okay, first of all, we all knew that Saraya was going to win. We all had that feeling. I mean, would it make sense? She announces that she's been medically cleared to wrestle for the first time since 2017. And then she's going to lose the match. I mean, yeah. But the fact that she won by pinfall, that's the shocking part to me, because I felt certain that she would win by submission. But, you know, but it didn't happen that way. But I'm not going to call the match a complete disaster, because it wasn't. Now, again, the ending, just kind of like the way it ended, you know, like that, it was definitely not the best ending. But, you know, and I don't mean to rip anybody or to sound like a complete a-hole, but it's just, in my honest opinion, I truly believe in my heart that the match between Saraya and Dr. Britt Baker, DMD, should have been, you know, by submission. And but honestly, the match within itself was great. You know, watching throughout the match, you know, seeing, you know, me giving, you know, a great reminder just how amazing Paige. How Saraya was amazing, you know, always been an amazing wrestler, been in the business for so long, born and raised in the pro wrestling business. I mean, Saraya looked absolutely phenomenal. I mean, I can honestly say she looked truly better than ever. I mean, where she is, you know, in her career and in her life at this point, I mean, it's no surprise that she's a better, you know, wrestler, you know, skill-wise, you know, she's better than ever. So, welcome back, Saraya. It was a blessing. It's a blessing to see you in the ring again. What a hell of a match, you know. And, you know, major props to both Saraya and Dr. Britt Baker, DMD, for one hell of a match. I mean, honestly, can't, at this point, you know, you can't help but praise, you know, both individuals for making the match absolutely amazing. Now we get to the three-way match for the AEW TNT Championship. Samoa Joe versus Wardlow versus Powerhouse Hobbs. Well, well, well. I didn't even know how I felt going into this match. Samoa Joe winning. And by technical submission. I mean, if you guys saw the end of the match, I'd imagine that you guys must have been as surprised as I was, you know, based on how the match ended. I can't say the match ended in a bad way. It was very a surprising, or rather a shocking way, but I can't say that it was bad. Now, recently, Samoa Joe did turn heel when he attacked Wardlow. You know, but seeing Samoa Joe versus Wardlow versus Powerhouse Hobbs, you know, three big, huge, muscular dudes, you know, with one, you know, one of them being, you know, a Ring of Honor individual, and, you know, that reign when Samoa Joe was the Ring of Honor World Champion and the Impact World Champion, you know, that undefeated streak at Impact. Man, Samoa Joe's done so much. Samoa Joe, much like Bryan Danielson, Samoa Joe is a god in the world of professional wrestling. So the way the match ended, so Powerhouse Hobbs gets powerbombed several times by Wardlow, and then all of a sudden, you know, Samoa Joe comes in and then locks in the Coquina Clutch on Powerhouse Hobbs, and then, you know, after that, the referee, you know, ends the match on a technical submission. So, but I'm telling you, the ending, just out of nowhere, Samoa Joe comes out and wins like that, and now Samoa Joe is the AEW TNT champion and the Ring of Honor television champion. Wow. Well, you know, I guess at the end of the day, that means we're going to be seeing Samoa Joe more often on AEW programming. So I'm telling you, you're seeing Wardlow drop the belt. Certainly never would have been expected, because I'll be honest with you. I might sound wrong for saying this, but I really believe that Powerhouse Hobbs would actually be the one victorious in this match. I really felt that Powerhouse Hobbs would be the guy. But, you know, as we know, Wardlow won the title back in July on Dynamite in Rochester, New York, when he beat Scorpio Sky in a street fight. You know, Wardlow was coming off, you know, that story when he was, you know, no longer, you know, he had that storyline with MJF that he beats MJF. He's basically no longer under the employment of MJF for good. So moving forward, you know, now that Wardlow dropped the belt, I'm kind of asking myself, where does he go from here? You know, I'm not sure about the status of him with the company right now, but it's just that I'm telling you, you know, Wardlow dropping the belt, I never would have expected it. But again, you know, once again, Tony Khan catches me by surprise. And, you know, Tony Khan has really been, he's really been full of surprises as of late, hasn't he? I mean, you know, I think ever since the beginning, I mean, when he announced that he had purchased Ring of Honor and Ring of Honor became All Elite, that was just one of his biggest surprises right there. And Tony Khan, you know, he's basically made a career out of, you know, giving fans major surprises, you know, with AEW. But again, I deeply apologize for my severe allergies, but here I am. But Samoa Joe winning, and again, I don't know what's more surprising, the way the match ended or the fact that Samoa Joe won. But I think the ending of the match, you know, definitely amazing, because it went in a way that nobody expected. And the way it went, I mean, it's just like, you just tell yourself, oh my goodness, what the heck did I just see? Like, did I just see that? Was I not dreaming? I mean, the finish has an influential impact on us, okay? I mean, you can't deny it. Just out of, you know, Samoa Joe locks in his submission on Powerhouse Hobbs, who had been powerbombed, I think, like four times at that point. And that's it. I mean, just like that. I mean, the referee ends it just like that, because Powerhouse Hobbs probably was, you know, all the power bombs he took, you know. And Samoa Joe just like that. Man. But as far as Wardlow goes and Powerhouse Hobbs go, I don't know where they go moving forward. Part of me believes that the whole thing between those three, it's probably just getting started. I wouldn't be surprised if those three continue to battle it out. You know, I wouldn't be surprised. Like, could you imagine in the future, like, you know, within the next couple of weeks or so on AEW Dynamite, there's another three-way match, and this time both titles are on the line? I mean, could you imagine that? I mean, that would actually be cool. Think about it. Samoa Joe, Wardlow, and Powerhouse Hobbs, a three-way match for both the AEW TNT Championship and the Ring of Honor World Television Championship. I mean, that right there is exciting. That's definitely, I mean, with those three brilliant talents, that's definitely a match I would love to tune in and see. But again, you know, we'll just have to wait and see how things go moving forward with AEW programming. But my gut feeling tells me that we have not seen the end of Samoa Joe and Wardlow and Powerhouse Hobbs. Like, we haven't seen anything out of that yet. But now the no disqualification tag team match. Sting and Darby Allin against Jeff Jarrett and Jay Lethal, with Sanjay Dutt and Satnam Singh. Well. You know, the whole thing with Darby Allin and Sting, I've loved this whole particular thing since the very beginning, okay? And seeing Sting still wrestle the way he does at this age, there's a saying, ladies and gentlemen, and that is, you are never, ever too old to kick butt. And Sting has been the perfect example of that. Sting, at 63 years old, yes, that's right, ladies and gentlemen, you heard me, 63 years old, he is still kicking serious butt in the professional wrestling ring. When we thought that he had retired in 2016 because of that neck injury in that match against Seth Rollins, oh boy. And seeing that he was clear to come back and he was wrestling and having great matches with All Elite Wrestling, Oh my God. Seeing Sting just still wrestle so good, you know, still being just amazing as he has ever always has been in this ring. It's a blessing, y'all. I mean, for me, I get to watch Sting wrestle so very good as an adult. The fact that I could not see it as a kid because I was not a WCW guy when I was a little kid. You know, I saw a lot of the work he did for Impact Wrestling, of course, but man, you know, still at this age, you know, and Sting, you know, again, his career started back in 1985 and he's still going strong, you know, nearly 38 years in the business and still going strong at 63 years old. Oh boy, oh boy, oh boy, oh boy. I don't even know what to say. I'm so dumbfounded. But again, you're never too old to kick butt, and you know, but I'm telling you, Sting at his age, still taking those bumps, still working well in the ring. Maybe I guess you could say for Sting, age is just simply a number. But this match within itself, I'm telling you, when Darby Allin went for that drop off that ladder, and he was caught by Satnam Singh, and then thrown right onto that ramp, and seeing, oh, I mean, that went there was cool, but then seeing Darby Allin take that guitar shot to the back when he was jumped off the rope, oh my God. I mean, the finish of that match too, you know, when that Sting death drop, you know, see, right now, I've lost my words because the way this match went, when Jay Lethal, you know, does that particular move and gets caught in the Scorpion Deathlock, gets caught in the Scorpion in the backward DDT. Oh boy, you know, Sting and Jeff Jarrett. I mean, you know, a rematch. You know, 22 years in the making, right? But man, I'm telling you, I'm sorry, y'all. See, right now, I can't even speak because of the goosebumps right now on my arm from this match. That's the story. That's the story within itself right there, ladies and gentlemen. The Sting and Darby Allin match with Jeff Jarrett and Jay Lethal. Oh. And the fact that the match went 11 minutes, man. You know, the fact it was so entertaining, you know, I also feel like, you know, I didn't even feel like, you know, it ended too quick because it kind of felt like the battle went on forever, but. Oh. You know, remember that thing at the beginning, that little joke they put that bag on the ramp, you know, right like that, and then Darby Allin makes his entrance, and then Sting pops up in the ring, you know, after Jeff Jarrett. Oh boy, oh boy. You know, and the fact that Jay Lethal and Jeff Jarrett had all these like phony Stings around, ugh. You know, no disqualification, and the fact, you know, how they have to take out Satnam Singh, you know, out of the match as well. Oh, God. Oh, my God. I mean, right now, I would do almost any, you know, I would love to have the opportunity just to sit down and watch that match one more time, because Sting and Darby Allin versus Jeff Jarrett and Jay Lethal, if you watched it, you know, you would be basically just as much of a loss for words as I am right now. You know, the fact that I don't want to go, you know, fully, I mean, the fact that I've gone detail by detail most matches, but in this one I just can't because I just strongly encourage everybody to watch this pay-per-view in this particular match. Sting and Darby Allin versus Jeff Jarrett and Jay Lethal, man. Man, oh man, oh man, what a freaking match. Oh. See, right now, I can go out and gloat about Sting all I want, but, you know, the fact that I was able to, you know, I've already seen a lot of good matches from Sting, you know, as an adult, but Sting in this one right here in a no disqualification tag team match and being an adult and, you know, knowing who Sting is and how popular and important he is in the pro wrestling business. Oh, God. I mean, one day I just want to meet, you know, Sting, shake his hand and say, that match you did with Darby Allin and with Jeff Jarrett and Jay Lethal. Man, oh man, oh man, that was awesome. That was awesome. So, props to Sting, props to Darby Allin, props to Jeff Jarrett, props to Jay Lethal, Sanjay Dutt, Satnam Singh, all those guys, they all did it together, and I am so grateful. I mean, I'm just grateful for every, you know, for all the talents that worked on this show, man. I'm telling you. Grateful to Khan, everybody. But speaking of being grateful, Jamie Hayter becoming the new interim AEW Women's World Champion. To be honest, guys, I was crying. You guys know my story about Jamie Hayter. How I admire her. I've studied her work on the British independent circuit, her work in Japan. Jamie Hayter, an absolutely unique and amazing talent. Okay? I knew that one way or the other, Jamie Hayter was going to become world champion. Okay? Did I expect it to be this night? No, not particularly, because I said this on the show. If Jamie Hayter breaks away as a single star, if she's no longer involved with Dr. Britt Baker, DMD, and Rebel, then definitely that's they're probably going to think of putting the belt on her. So as happy and blessed as I was that Jamie Hayter, a female professional wrestler that I have true admiration for, finally becoming the champion. Of course, we have to mention interim, but still, Jamie Hayter is a champion in my book. No matter what, she's a champion in my book. I appreciate everything Jamie Hayter has done. I'm a huge fan of hers. And if by any chance, if I could ever have her on this show, that would be one of my biggest accomplishments, not only from a journalist perspective, but from a personal point, but personal perspective as well. Jamie Hayter, God bless her. Anyway, and God bless Toni Storm as well. Don't get me wrong. Anyway, but I'm telling you, all the close calls, you know, Toni Storm, you know, kicking out, Jamie Hayter kicking out. I mean, at first, you know, when Rebel, you know, attempted to interfere and she got disqualified, and then all out of nowhere, you know, Toni Storm gets attacked by, you know, a hooded figure that turned out to be Dr. Britt Baker, DMD. At first, you know, when she got curb stomped right on the title outside, and then got put back in the ring, Jamie Hayter went for the cover, but Toni Storm kicked out. Man. But, you know, I could talk about the match, basically, but right now, honestly, is where does this storyline go from here? Because recently, I think earlier, like, this week, there was reports that Thunder Rosa could officially be stripped of the AEW Women's World Championship because she still hasn't fully recovered from that back injury to where she had to basically be off of television in the first place. Because if you remember correctly, I said on this show that the whole storyline between Toni Storm and Thunder Rosa over the title, it needs to be finished, okay? And I said this, that Thunder Rosa is going to come back. She's going to have the match versus Toni Storm to crown the official undisputed Women's World Champion. But, you know, I would imagine that definitely had to be part of the plans, but because Thunder Rosa still has not recovered from her back injury, part of me believes that Tony Khan decided to make a change in the plans. I mean, sometimes in the world of professional wrestling, you have to scrap plans and make changes. You have to improvise, basically. I mean, that's one of the biggest things right there. You have to improvise. So right now, I mean, there's still no official word on Thunder Rosa. I mean, honestly, I'll be honest. At first, the hooded figure, I thought that was Thunder. To be honest, I thought that was Thunder Rosa, honestly, But then, I'll be honest. Maybe I said to myself this, it would not be surprising if Thunder Rosa interfered and cost Toni Storm the title, okay? But, you know, the hooded figure, I'll be honest, I probably just slipped it out and said that I thought at first it was Thunder Rosa. But, you know, when we saw that move, we all knew that it was Jamie Hayter. Though we all knew it was Dr. Britt Baker, DMD. But right now, moving forward, so the whole thing with Thunder Rosa moving forward is, I have no idea what could possibly happen out of that. But the whole thing with the Undisputed Women's World, AEW Women's World Championship, it's not going to happen between Storm and Thunder Rosa. But I'd imagine, but right now, you know, as far as Jamie Hayter goes, you know, the fact that Jamie Hayter is still paired up with Rebel and Dr. Britt Baker, DMD, you know, I just never would have expected, you know, for those three to still be part of a group, but with Jamie Hayter as the champion. So the whole thing with Jamie Hayter, Dr. Britt Baker, and Rebel moving forward, that I don't know. And the whole thing with Toni Storm moving forward, I don't know. So the future of the AEW Women's World Champion right now is basically up in the air. So, I mean, whatever happens, happens. We'll have to wait and see how things go moving forward, But the whole thing right now with Thunder Rosa's injury, because, you know, again, you know, she's still the AEW Women's World Champion. I mean, I think she recently hit 250 days as champion. So But, you know, she's been out with a back injury for a while now, and there's still no word on when she's going to come back. But AEW management and the booking still need to finish the whole thing between Toni Storm and Thunder Rosa. So, you know, and my prediction was they have the match to make to see who's the official undisputed AEW Women's World Champion. And my prediction was that Toni Storm was going to win, but Toni Storm was going to turn heel during the match. But I guess that's definitely not going to happen. I mean, Toni Storm turning heel in the near future is you know, still a possibility, but just not in the particular perspective that I had pictured the situation in. But you know, congratulations to Jamie. I'm very happy for her. Again, I have nothing but respect and admiration for Jamie. Same thing with Dr. Britt Baker. Same thing with Toni Storm. You know, a lot of the female wrestlers in the AEW locker room I admire a lot. And, you know, that's why I always push for AEW booking and creative to do better things with that brilliant women's locker room that they have. So the whole thing with the AEW, the interim AEW Women's World Championship thing moving forward, I'll have to wait and see. Oh, boy. Man, I'm telling you, what a long night it was. A total of 13 matches, and we're at match number 12. The Acclaimed versus Swerve in Our Glory. Of course, you know, when the Acclaimed won the titles, you know, beating Swerve in Our Glory at the AEW Grand Slam. You know, the whole story didn't end right there. And the whole thing with Billy Gunn. You know, Billy Gunn was originally at the corner, but he didn't end up getting involved in the match. But, you know, the Acclaimed, that rap at the beginning was certainly very, very, very interesting. Definitely something very cool, very entertaining, very classic. But, you know, in the match, this particular match, kind of told myself, who are the heels? Are the Acclaimed still heel? Or the Swerve in Our Glory still a faces? But we saw something. Keith Lee turned on Swerve Strickland. But for those of you that watch, I think the way Keith... I don't know if you should... Should we honestly say that Keith Lee turned on Swerve Strickland? Because... Look, for those of you that haven't watched, and you know what, if you're listening, then and you didn't watch, then if you've been listening, you know, at this point, you can't say that it's been spoiled, because if you've been listening, then you've listened, then you know. But Keith Lee, Swerve Strickland had a weapon and told Keith Lee to use it on the Acclaimed, and he could have, and they could have recaptured the titles, and I thought that was going to happen. But Keith Lee takes the weapon and throws it and says, "We're not doing it this way." And then Swerve Strickland loses it, and then he slaps Keith Lee. With Keith Lee retaliates by just simply walking out and leaving Swerve Strickland to be taken out 2-on-1 by the Acclaimed. So honestly, I mean, now Swerve and Our Glory, they were faced when they lost the titles, and I thought they would turn heel soon, but... I'd imagine in this match too, and the Acclaimed were heels, but I think the Acclaimed is now kind of basically on their way to becoming faces, and Keith Lee now being a face, so I'd imagine that the Acclaimed and Keith Lee, there's some respect right there. Storyline, real life respect too, but in storyline, Keith Lee, and the Acclaimed are on good terms, and so I'd imagine at this point, there's going to be a lengthy feud between Swerve Strickland and Keith Lee, so... At least that's what I've expected, so I'd imagine Swerve and Our Glory is no more... Basically, the Acclaimed, they'll probably move on to a feud with another tag team. Of course, the Acclaimed, the all-time tag team wins in AEW. So, the Acclaimed are definitely going to move on to another rivalry. I'm not sure who they could honestly feud with. But I'm sure, maybe FTR. I honestly don't know. But I'm sure there's other teams out there that, Tony Khan could throw at them. But one thing's for sure... is that we know that it's clearly obvious at this point that there's going to be a long feud between Keith Lee and Swerve Strickland, and it would not surprise me if this rivalry went on until March of next year that got settled at the AEW Revolution in San Francisco. So, I mean, do rivalries really go that long? Does it need to be that long? I mean, not particularly, but when a major rivalry is taking place... It's best for it to be officially settled at the next official major pay-per-view, and that's the way I kind of see it coming. Strickland and Keith Lee could basically, I would say probably on AEW Dynamite, serve Strickland. I mean, one of those two are probably going to cut a promo and then whatever. I'd imagine that If Keith Lee cuts the promo, then Strickland comes, you know, pops out and attempts to attack him, or Keith Lee explains that he did not want to go down this way, or if it's Swerve Strickland that cuts the promo and Keith Lee attacks, Swerve will say, you know, if it wasn't for Keith Lee, we'd still be the champions if he hadn't, you know, decided to, whatever. So Swerve Strickland is definitely based on his rate of becoming a big heel, and Keith Lee's going to be the face, and those two are going to have a lengthy rivalry, so that's the way I see it. But as far as the Acclaim goes, I mean, those guys are truly amazing. And I really don't know where it goes moving forward. I mean, you know, AEW is all the element of surprise. And I guess with AEW, just, you know, you always expect the unexpected. But, you know, talking about expecting something that we knew what would happen. I mean, that's what we saw in the main event between Maxwell Jacob Friedman and Jon Moxley in the match for the AEW World title, which we'll get to in a little bit. But the match between the Acclaimed and Swerve and Our Glory, I mean, when Keith Lee, you know, like that through that barricade, and man, the whole thing just, this is what I love about these tag team matches. I mean, you know, like, that's why, really, you know, Even if I try going into detail by detail, you know, I always stop myself because, you know, I can only go so far because, you know, God knows how many, you know, because I know that a lot of people that have listened, they didn't get to catch the show, but I'm telling you, the bottom line out of the thing is that Keith Lee and Swerve Strickland, they're about to embark on a singles feud. Swerve and Our Glory is basically no more, so that's all I got to say about that one. But the tag team match for the AEW World Tag Team Championship was, you know, absolutely amazing. You know, nearly 20 minutes, and Billy Gunn didn't, you know, get involved, but Keith Lee refusing to use the weapon and then getting slapped, and then Swerve and Our Glory basically just being, you know, basically being flushed down the toilet. Man. Oh, boy. But now we get to the main event, MJF versus Jon Moxley, which of course was MJF's casino ladder poker chip cash-in. For those of you that saw the match, you saw MJF make that entrance, and if you know exactly what I'm talking about, and I'm talking about his interaction with a fan, with a female fan. If you saw it, then you know what you saw. Okay? You know what you saw. Alright? But man, what a main event. And the fact that MJF was being heavily cheered while Jon Moxley was the one being booed. And the fact that, and MJF being the heel that he is, but he's being cheered and everything. I mean, even he's even somehow interacting with a crowd and everything. And Moxley's like flipping people off and everything. Oh. But the match within itself, man. This is how these pay-per-view matches just have to go. When see everybody had the feeling. We all knew MJF at this point. MJF was gonna win. I mean, the whole story when he cut that massive nuke pipe bomb promo, burying Tony Khan, burying the company, disappearing from AEW for a very, very long time. Oh boy, oh boy, oh boy. MJF worked everybody big time. MJF really made that impact. When he cut that, I mean, after that whole thing with Wardlow, again, you know, burying Tony Khan, burying the company, you know, just shooting on the mic. It all comes down to this. So we knew MJF was going to win. But, you know, still moving forward, I mean, anything is going to happen. I mean, I think as far as Jon Moxley goes, it's quite clear that we're not going to see him for a long time. I mean, everybody's going to talk about how, you know, that vacation he was supposed to have during the summer, and then he never got it. So I think, yeah, Jon Moxley is definitely going to disappear. I'd imagine at this point, I'd be surprised if this didn't happen, but Jon Moxley is definitely going to disappear from AEW programming now. I don't know how long Jon Moxley is going to be gone. I'd imagine probably anywhere between two and four months minimum. But you know, but it's clear that, you know, Moxley is definitely going to be absent for a while and have, you know, some time off and take that vacation that everybody, you know, said he was supposed to have during the summer, you know. So yeah, but you know, with Renee, you know, working with All Elite Wrestling, I mean, who knows? But So I'd expect John Moxley to be gone from AEW programming for a while, but, you know, but now that his wife is working with AEW, I mean, who knows? But, you know, the biggest thing is that, you know, a lot of fans talked about it, but William Regal did what we all knew what would happen. Because what we all remember, when it came toward the match, MJF reaches into his trunks, pulls out the ring, and prepares to use it. And remember, the referee was incapacitated, okay? But William Regal comes up, and then, you know, as if he's telling him, don't even think about it. And then MJF just, you know, throws the ring outside ringside, and then another referee comes out, and then he gets knocked out too. And then MJF is like, you know, kind of crawling, and then William Regal's right there. And then all of a sudden, William Regal tosses in brass knuckles. MJF uses them, pins John Moxley, and boom. I mean, I'm telling you, you should have seen the reaction from all the wrestling fans that were in that auditorium with me. Oh, boy. You know, classic William Regal with the brass knuckles. I mean, that's the William Regal that we all remember, don't we? Brass knuckles getting involved in the match. MJF uses them, puts them back into his trunks, and that was it. I mean, I knew it. I knew that. I knew that William Regal was going to use it. But as far as William Regal goes, you know, of course, as we know, with his status right now, I think now he's officially MJF's manager, obviously, but I think now moving forward, the Blackpool Combat Club, I think he's basically, I think basically he's no longer part of that. So, again, you know, I'm sure on AEW Dynamite, There's honestly, we all know that MJF is gonna, you know, be in the ring, have a segment and whatnot, and I'm sure that, you know, William Regal is gonna explain why he did what he did. I mean, we all see something like that, but I think the Blackpool Combat Club, I'd imagine at this point it's probably no more. I don't know, or maybe MJF is now the leader of the Blackpool Combat Club. I mean, like I said, we're gonna find out. We are gonna find out. And as far as William Regal goes, I mean, he's a heel for the first time since May of 2012. So, boy, you know, I'll have to, you know, that paradigm shift off the top rope, and, you know, MJF just, you know, grabs the rope, you know, from the pin like that. And, you know, I mean, John Moxley was one kind of almost behaving like a heel. I mean, MJF injures his knee and then Moxley targets it. So, you know, honestly, you know, that kind of makes Moxley look like the heel, but. But let's be honest, Maxwell Jacob Friedman, you know, being a babyface, come on. I mean, even if the crowd, you know, even reacts positively to him, we all know MJF is still a major heel. He's never going to turn face. I mean, if he does, I'd be the biggest, I'd be so shocked that I don't even know if I could even be mentally capable of doing an episode, at least not by myself, like I'm doing right now. But I'm telling you, like, you know, I even spoke to David. He knew. I mean, same thing with my buddy Ricky Litwinkiewicz. We all knew that Regal was going to turn heel. We all felt it. I mean, come on, us wrestling fans have been paying attention to what's been going on. We all knew that something was going to happen. But now, in argument's sake, a lot of us feel like maybe it would have been better if MJF would have won the title cleanly. In my case, I think it would have been cooler if he had won cleanly, but like I said, we all knew that William Regal was going to turn heel. So William Regal, you know, pulling out the brass knuckles, giving them to MJF, MJF uses them and wins the title. That's basically just as amazing as well, because again, we had that feeling that it was coming, and it finally did happen. And ladies and gentlemen, as a result, Maxwell Jacob Friedman, who is better than you when you know it, is your new AEW World Champion, and you can bet that he is going to be champion for a very, very long time. And as far as Jon Moxley goes, well, we all know that new deal he signed recently like that, but I think for now it would not be a surprise if he was absent from AEW programming for a while. But then again, his wife now works with the company, so who knows with moving forward. But that doesn't mean that he won't take that vacation that we were all talking about it for a long time. basically moving forward with all these storylines moving ahead and what's next for AEW programming. There's a lot of it is all up in the air. We don't know what to expect. But again, Tony Khan always seems to have a major surprise for us. And I can't wait to see what things go on moving forward. Well, speaking of a couple of announcements, probably should have said this earlier, but you know, during the match, you know, it was announced that Konosuke Takeshita is now officially All Elite. You know, Konosuke also currently works for Japanese wrestling promotion DDT Pro Wrestling, and now he's with All Elite Wrestling as well. And it was also announced that, you know, after the Fatal 4-Way, it was announced that, you know, Chris Jericho will be wrestling Tomohiro Ishii, which is somebody that Chris Jericho knows very, very well. You know, Tomohiro Ishii, you know, who currently works for New Japan Pro Wrestling. And as we know, All Elite Wrestling and New Japan Pro Wrestling have had a working relationship for quite a long time. You know, he also worked for, you know, I think Ishii also worked for Fighting World of Japan Pro Wrestling, where he was the company's chairman. But, you know, Tomohiro Ishii, you know, did a little research with him, you know, through the working relationship with Ring of Honor. You know, he's actually a former Ring of Honor World Television Champion and a 2-time undisputed British Heavyweight Champion. So, yeah, so Tomohiro Ishii versus Chris Jericho. You know, Chris Jericho said in that promo, in that backstage promo, well, everything like that. I mean, if you saw that, then you know what he said. So, yeah, Tomohiro Ishii versus Chris Jericho on the Thanksgiving Eve edition of AEW Dynamite is definitely going to be exciting. So, man. You know, it was funny, too. Even Orange Cassidy got involved in that little thing. And, of course, Chris Jericho says, "You still owe me $7,000 for that jacket." But, you know, it's funny because Orange Cassidy is the one who informed Jericho that Tomohiro Ishii wanted a shot at the title. So, you know, and of course, you know, Chris Jericho accepts the challenge and then kind of enlightens us, everybody, that Ishii was an up-and-coming wrestler in Japan. And that Chris Jericho said, you know, he would carry out my luggage, do all this and all that. So Chris Jericho kind of the typical hero, heel kind of thing. I said, I don't know if I just said hero, but you know, the fact that, you know, Chris Jericho ended the promo by saying, and I quote, "Your senpai is waiting for you, baka." So, man. So Tomohiro Ishii versus Chris Jericho. Well, that's definitely something exciting, but I have to wait and see. But, you know, moving forward with the Ring of Honor title, again, everything's up in the air. That's, you know, that's basically what Tony Khan's kind of put us through. You know, we don't know what to expect, but Tony Khan always finds a way to impact us, whether it's negative or positive. Bottom line is, AEW is all about surprises, as is Tony Khan. Ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank you very, very much for joining me today in recapping All Elite Full Gear. I apologize that I had to do it by myself, and I apologize that, you know, I'm really sick. I all the sniffing and the coughing I must have done, but, you know, the show had to move on, and, you know, I already promised everybody I would do a recap, so here I am. But again, I apologize, you know, if the coughing was a bit excessive. You know, I'm really sick, but here I am, and, you know, like that, so Ringside Chaos is available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Amazon Music, and YouTube. And remember, folks, if you know somebody that truly loves professional wrestling and they are looking for the most exciting pro wrestling podcast in the world, then ladies and gentlemen, you know that Ringside Chaos is their choice. Ringside Chaos is the show for all pro wrestling fans that have such a great passion and knowledge for the world of professional wrestling. Ringside Chaos is the show for you. Thank you all very, very much, and I will see y'all next time.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.